Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses for an audience of real entrepreneurs. Believe it or not, you listen to these interviews, these stories will be embedded in your head. And I promise at the time when you need them, they will just come out. They are programmed to be that way. You don't have to take notes. You just have to trust that a story well told will be memorable enough that when you need the point of it, it'll be there for you. Joining me today is an entrepreneur I'm especially excited to talk about for a few different reasons. Number one, he's a listener. He's somebody who's listened just like you and has had these stories embedded in his head. Number two, he is outside the United States. I have long said, yes, I live in San Francisco. I'm not living here for my sake. My wife loves living here. I'm here for her. I definitely see the advantage of living here. But I also am seeing the advantage of living outside of here. And today's guest is an entrepreneur who is way far outside of here. He is in India, where I'm seeing more and more entrepreneurs are doing killer stuff. I'd love to go to India and spend a month there to do a series of interviews because I'm seeing such good things happen there. And so I want to interview him about what it's like to build a company outside of the US and outside of San Francisco and the Silicon Valley mindset. And the other final thing that excites me is that he is in chatbots. And as soon as I say chatbots, I think some people are rolling their eyes, if not physically, then in their heads. Let me explain to you why this is so important. Imagine you're doing a Google search for something that you're interested in, like health insurance or life insurance or God knows what. Everything is a search, right, that starts off on Google and eventually leads you to a landing page. Now, if you go to a landing page, the first thing you're asked for is your email address. That's totally fine. But a lot of sites need more information to qualify you to see if you're really a good fit to get on a call with a salesperson or a good fit for their product. And so what they do, they have forms. The problem is people don't like forms. People like people. And so you're going to get a lot of drop off with people who don't want to fill in your form and give you their email address, drop off with people who don't want to give you more information about themselves, drop off, which means you're losing people that you paid money for, or you worked hard to create a site to cater to. Well, today's guest is a guy who's found a solution. His name is Ish Jindal. He is the founder of TARS. What they do is, I was going to say replace that form, but it doesn't have to be an either or. What they'll do is allow you to keep that form as you like it, whether it's good or not. But in that bottom right of your screen, on your webpage, they will have a little chat bubble with a little text that anyone who wants to can hit that text and start interacting. And by interacting, I mean things like maybe the form says, hey, do you have insurance or do you need it? A person can pop that up and start responding, and through that conversational experience, give their email address, answer questions, and the thing just keeps changing, moving, and feels more modern. That's what he does. Ish, I'm looking at your face to see if there's like Andrew's nailing it or not. You have got the biggest face. Am I nailing it or not?
Yeah, you are. I mean, that's actually a pretty good explanation of what you do. I can actually use this in our video.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. I should say this interview is sponsored by two phenomenal companies. The first, if you don't have any of this type of experience in your software and you want to add it on, go check out TopTal. They could build that or just about any, not just about anything that's possible. Their developers can build for you. Go to toptal.com/Mixergy. And the second, if you need a website hosted, go to the site that Ish and I have both used. It's called HostGator. Check them out at HostGator.com, but I'll tell everyone about those later. First, Ish, good to have you here.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
What part of India are you from? Sorry, I interrupted you just as you were about to say you were listening. Sorry, I'm kind of like a jerk that way. What part of India are you from?
So the company is based out of Bangalore, which is in the southern part of India. But yeah, I'm originally from the north, somewhere close to Delhi, which is the capital. But yeah, I mean, last five, six years, I've been in Bangalore, which is where you would find most of the software companies.
Yeah. I want to ask you about the difference in experiences in both those cities, but let's first answer a question that I think people are wondering, which is how well are you doing with this business? Specifically, what's your annual revenue now?
So right now we are doing close to $500,000 in ARR, which is the recurring revenue, because it's a pure play SaaS for us.
Yep.
So that's what we're doing right now. Yeah.
And it's all bootstrap, right?
It's all bootstrap. Yeah. Okay. We've never listened to it. Yeah.
What is the difference? Where you grew up in the northern part of India, what was that like?
So I would say the biggest difference is in terms of the language you speak, the language people around you speak, and possibly the food. I think the food is the biggest one, because you get really, I mean, it depends on your taste buds, but I think you get really spicy one. Spicy food in the north, not just spicy, but it's totally different. In the south, it would be totally different. But I guess it's not been difficult for me, because the last 12 years of my life, I've been in the southern part of India. So it's almost home for me right now. Yeah.
Not as much spicy. What about like the people's personalities? Also spicy? Are we looking at when we're, you're in Bangalore right now, you said, right?
Yep.
Bangalore, I feel like people are like hustling to create companies more. Am I right?
Yep. So I wouldn't say that is the difference, the main difference between say a Delhi or a Gurgaon versus a Bangalore. I mean, people, you know, at say in both of these cities are pretty much hustling, right?
They are, okay.
The difference lies pretty much, I mean, the core difference that I see, right? People are people would smile when they see you in Bangalore, right?
Okay.
In Delhi, people are feel a little bit furious, like, you know, like you would find more humble people in Bangalore compared to a Delhi. That's how I would put it. But okay. Yes, and even in terms of the skill set, you would find more business-minded people, or like the business guys would be in Delhi and the tech guys would be in Bangalore. Like that's how I would put it, because Bangalore was primarily tech. Delhi is where the smaller, the old businesses evolved, and that's why you have a lot of small businesses in Delhi, right? But yeah, I mean, I think every city is very different. Mumbai would be very different. Bangalore is different. Chennai is very different. Chennai is the SaaS capital right now, with most of the bigger companies in there. But yeah, I mean, that's how I would put it.
You were working at a travel startup. What kind of travel were you guys doing? Where this idea came from at this startup? What kind of travel were you guys booking?
Right. So I was one of the founders in the last startup I was working on, which is called Padharo, in the travel space. And what we were doing is very similar to what Airbnb Trips or Experiences does at this point in time, right? But so basically we, you know, like say you wanted to come to India, right? You come to India and you don't really want to go to Taj Mahal, and you want to go to Taj Mahal, sure, click pictures, but then you would want to, right? And that's not, right? I mean, a lot of people do want to go to Taj Mahal, but then you would want to talk to a lot of people like me.
Yes.
Normal people who,
right.
And you would want to know what's the real difference between a Bangalore and Delhi, right? You would want to know how my life looks like what is my usual day like, right?
Right.
So that's what we were doing, right? So if Andrew is coming to India, you come to Bangalore, we would connect you with one of our greeters. We used to call them greeters. You would meet them up and they'll take you around. So it could be depending on what your interests lie. Like if you are more into businesses, startups and stuff like that, you would probably match with someone who's doing something similar. If you're into music, connect with someone who's into music. It was a pure play travel marketplace. These guys would get paid and you would pay them for the experience and we would take a cut on it. All right.
Perfect. So, and you were doing customer service and you were starting to see repetitive questions. What were the repetitive questions?
Right. So, so the thing was, you know, whenever someone is coming to India, you were at the, say, at the airport, right? Now, we used to have these WhatsApp groups where you would ask questions like, you know, hey, Ish, should I take a cab? Should I take an auto? How much would the... Because the single biggest worry that any inbound traveler has while they're coming to India is someone is going to cheat me or something like that, right? That's
the usual. I have to say, that happens to me whenever I get into any new city. You just land and you don't know. Is this a city where you could trust the taxi drivers or not, right? And it's not just an outside the U.S. thing. If you get to Vegas... Do not trust the cab drivers. They will absolutely take you for a ride, right? But if you come to New York, you could trust the cab drivers. They've been incredibly watched by the city. You don't know. You land right. So it's one of the questions. And two, you guys would do tech support or help support on WhatsApp groups?
Yes. So basically, if you are coming and if you've taken one of the experiences, what we would do is they'll be at this WhatsApp group and you would be in touch with all the different greeters that you would be meeting while in India. So you can show up.
You would put me in touch with several greeters. It wouldn't be an experience where it's one greeter who manages my whole experience. Is that right?
Yeah, because you would go to Delhi and then you would come to Bangalore and then you would go to Chennai, right? So there'll be a different greeter in different cities.
And then you also, Ish, would be in the chat with them too.
I would be in every WhatsApp group, yeah.
Okay. That's interesting, actually, that WhatsApp is being used that way. I had no idea. And so what are some of the questions that you would see come over and over to you?
So these questions would be very similar. You know, the first question people would say is, how do I get a SIM card, right? Like you enter into Mumbai, you'd be like, how do I get a local number, right?
Yep.
And then there are a lot of people you can't trust and you would tell them that, right? And then the questions around the transport, the food, all of the very small questions, right? And what I figured was, you know, all of like these guys, the greeters, were doing it all of this for free, but they're going to become dormant or not going to reply because they're not making any money out of it. The answering of questions part, right? And it was like these questions, anyways, the answers to these questions exist on TripAdvisor or somewhere on the web. Why can't we just automate this stuff? And so, yeah, I think that's where the idea evolved. And I was also reading a lot of people writing about conversational interfaces in the Valley. One was one of the A16Z members. I don't remember his name. But Semil Shah was writing about it. I was reading his stuff, I think. This was like 3-4 years back. But yeah. So I was reading all of this stuff and I was having these problems. I was like, can we really solve it or not? So yeah, that's where it evolved.
Got it. And you were thinking, hey, you know what? I think what I could do is, if people are asking the same question, like, where do I get a SIM card? Just code it in using software and have the software answer before the greeters do, before Ish does. And you were thinking about that and you said, this is something that should be a startup?
Yes. So that's where the thought was. Because, because the thing was, the travel thing I was doing was becoming pretty operational, right? I mean, you need to have all these experiences conducted all over the country and whatnot. And I was like, you know, can I build a software product? Because there was this fancy in me that, you know, when you build a software product, you don't really have to do a lot of work because the software would keep running and you would keep pumping in money, right? So that was the idea. Can we build a software product just focusing on this specific problem? Yeah.
Okay. And so you couldn't do it yourself because you're not a developer. How did you find a developer who could help you do it?
Yeah, so Vineet, who is my co-founder at TASK right now, he's the one I started off working on this idea, right?
How'd you find him?
Yeah, so there's this website called Co-Founders Lab. I don't know if you've heard of it. So what I would do is I would go in there and look at developers who have been working on something for a while and it's not going anywhere. So like there are a lot of these developers who would quit their jobs, start building a product and not get even a single user. So yeah. I was looking at these guys and saying, you know, can we meet? And so basically I would find them on Co-Founders Lab, go back to LinkedIn and start connecting and start meeting them. And this is how I met Vineet as well. So yeah, this was pure hustle, how I got to meet him. Yes.
And what was his project that he had up on Co-Founders Lab?
So he was working on a text classification product for legal industry. He's not from legal. He doesn't know anything about legal, but he was doing something in the legal industry. So he's building so basically you have a lot of data in the legal industry, right? So it could be about the timeline of a particular case or something like that. He was trying to sort of classify this data so that it's similar that you can ask any question based on this data and it will quickly respond so that a lawyer doesn't have to go through all of this data.
Okay. And so the first version of the product, what did it look like? What could it do?
So yeah, I mean, so we didn't really build the product. So what we did is we did something over WhatsApp again, right? So what we did is we got this WhatsApp number let me take a step back, right? The problem we had was we didn't know which segment to build for, right? Should we do it in travel? Should we do it in entertainment? Or should we do it? Someone would say, you know, the movie I should watch right now, right? That's a problem to solve, right? Can it be done over chat or should we solve something for travel? We didn't really know that, right? So we said, let's do one thing. Let's get a WhatsApp number. And if you remember, there was something called Magic in the US back in 2015, right? So we started doing something similar, but we didn't want to do that. We just wanted to know what questions people would generally ask, right? So we had this WhatsApp number. You could ping us and there were like 4 interns behind the scenes who were answering all of these questions. And
so was it an ask me anything question? A site? Not even a site. It's a WhatsApp number that people can WhatsApp connect with and then ask anything. And you wanted to see what questions would people ask. And instead of having software answer it, you had 4 interns just sit there and respond.
Right. I was one of them as well for a particular period. But yeah, I mean, so we built that. So like we were doing that, you know, you could ask anything you want. You want an electrician at your home, we would help you with that. You want pizza delivered, we would help you with that.
All for free and all to see what would people ask software.
Exactly.
Okay. Yes. And this was the whole, I'm looking at the Internet Archive. 2015, that's essentially what the site was. It was
June of 2015. Yeah. June of 2015. Yeah.
For the whole year, essentially, that's what your site was about. Connect with us on WhatsApp, ask us questions. 2016, things change, and I'll ask you about that in a moment. But let me understand, what did you learn from doing things that way?
Right. So good question, right? So we did that for about 3 months. The website was still on, but we had stopped working on it because both of us knew. I think the first thing people, a lot of founders make a mistake, and this is something we made a mistake as well, is it was not a founder product fit or a founder market fit, because both of us don't like to do something which is very operational. Like, we can't run an e-commerce company because
yes,
there's just too many people, too much operations, right? Vineet was like, I can't do this. Like, after a couple of months, he was like, I can't do this. I'm not doing this. I am away. Like, you can keep running with it, this with your interns, but I'm not doing this. So he started studying about what you could build, right? But that is something we knew. The second thing,
because he wanted to build things. He didn't want to sit and answer people's questions and try to figure out what the product is, right?
So he wanted to build, but he couldn't figure out if we could build something with this experience. Like, because okay, people were asking questions all over the place and we didn't know what we could automate. Like, honestly, after a couple of months, we didn't know what was the single biggest problem.
Okay.
Right. But what we did know, or what was the good part about that experience, was a lot of people were asking for home services. Remember HomeJoy back in 2015?
Yes, for cleaning services, yeah.
Exactly, right? So a lot of people were asking us questions around, can you help us do this? Because we were primarily in Bangalore, and Bangalore, I would say, is like the first world of India, where, you know, it's like the, you know, like, people don't have small problems. People have these as the problems, right? So we were helping out people with all of these questions around, can you help me get pizza delivered, or can you help me with a maid, electrician, whatnot? And we were visiting all of these websites, like HomeJoy. There were a lot of websites in India, right? And while we had stopped working on that WhatsApp thing, all of these websites, the HomeJoy-like websites, they had a form, and it's a very structured form. And we were basically saying, can we just automate this process? Like, which is a standard form? Which city are you in? What do you want?
Wow.
Yeah, so that was the first customer, was someone like HomeJoy in India. It's called Time Savers. They were our first customer in India.
Okay. So as you're trying to figure out, how do we pivot towards letting people find home services like cleaning, you looked at competitors, you saw that their sites weren't really great, and you said, we could fix their experiences with this. And that's how you found your first client. You just reached out to him the way that we'll hear later on. You did a lot of cold emailing. You just reached out to him. You said, hey, can I find out about you? Can I create this for you? And he said, sure.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's what happened. Yeah.
Just changes forms into a chat experience.
Exactly.
And he asked you, how much are you charging for it? What'd you answer?
So the only thing I knew is a $49 or a $99 per month, because that's what all SaaS products are priced, right? So I told them $99 a month. And he seemed okay with it.
Okay.
It's $99 now, right? So this was, I think, December of 2015, which is when, so we had this front-end JavaScript running, which was like a chat interface, but totally automated, but there was nothing behind the scenes. It was just a front-end JavaScript running. And it was basically form converted into a chat, right?
Just a different design. We're not talking about brilliant coding at this point yet. We're just talking about a different design for the form, one that looked more like a chat.
Exactly. I mean, I think if you go into Wayback Machine, you would be able to see the demo of it also on the website.
I'm on the site. Now, January 2016, the whole site changes. It now says, form filling on mobile simplified. Enable your users to fill forms on automated mobile messaging.
Yes, exactly.
Now, I've got to tell you, one of the things that I see about this is, you guys are just not great at like marketing communication. That is not, it's not super clear. Form filling on mobile, I don't even know that that's like grammatically correct, right? You're hustling, you're working hard, but there's a thing that's missing there. It's that marketing, right? That marketing communication. Am I right? Is that too insulting for me to say?
Not really. I mean, so I totally agree, right? I mean, we were good at building a product, and I personally had zero experience of doing anything B2B. Like, I think I had used probably a couple of B2B products before that, but because I was in B2C all my life before that, right? So I didn't really know how to sell a B2B product. Vineet was a pure developer at that point of time. So we weren't really good at marketing. Yeah. We weren't. And I don't know if we are good at marketing right now, but back then we were not good at all. Yeah. Totally agree.
You've gotten better, but I do see some rough spots in the way that you guys communicate. That it's clearly not like a marketing, I don't know. It doesn't feel like you guys are great at marketing the way that some of your competitors are just right. Unbelievable marketers and communicators, even if right. Their product is not as good, right?
Yep. They are definitely good at marketing for sure. Yeah.
But you've got the freaking hustle. And so you said, this is our thing. I now know what we are. I've got to go out and get clients. How many different founders did you reach out to?
So the thing with the product was nobody was actually looking for it. Like nobody would say, can I convert forms into a chat? Like nobody knew about this, right? So yep. The only way I knew was reach out to people, send them cold emails, send them LinkedIn messages and try to reach out, right? And uh-huh. I think over the next 6 months, January to a June or a July of that year, I think we reached out to some 3,000 odd companies. So we had this intern who was essentially, his job was to build lists, right? And he would build lists. And I think I spoke with some 500, 600 founders over the next 6 months.
Spoke with. So that means he's sending out thousands of offers. Hundreds are saying yes to you. They're interested in this crazy thing that you guys are coming up with enough to see what it is. You're talking to hundreds of them. And it's your job now to close these people that he found on email, LinkedIn, etc.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
Wow. And I know you had a process for responding to them. What was the process? It was just doing a demo?
So, let me take a step back again, right? The people we were reaching out to, our idea was simple. Reach out to those startups who had recently raised money.
Yeah. Because if they had funding, then they had enough to spend on you.
And they want to experiment with something new. Could be to show to the investors. Could be for something, right? The marketing guy has to show something to the team because he's been hired recently. So that was the idea, right? But the process was simple. Mail goes out. These people respond. We have a call. Do a simple demo. I mean, and even the people we were reaching out to, they already had a form on their website. So we had a list of these demos, which were specifically built for those industries. So I would just showcase them the front end demo.
Got it. All right. Let me take a moment here to talk about my first sponsor and then come back and see what happened as you were making all these calls. First sponsor is a company called HostGator. What did you use HostGator for? I know you're a customer.
Right. So I built my first website, I think back in 2008 or 9, which was an education related website. And HostGator was the platform or I was hosting my website basically using HostGator.
What was the website?
It's called EduRena, EduRena. It's not active right now.
Okay.
It's almost 10 years. I think I recently canceled my HostGator subscription. I was a customer for 10 years. Yeah.
Because of that website that you launched?
Yes.
And did you experiment beyond it or was it just that one website?
So it was one website, but I was running multiple subdomains, multiple different domains. Every subdomain had a different industry running. I didn't have multiple domains and stuff.
So you had this one product and you said, I want to position it differently for each different potential client. So I'm going to create different subdomains.
Yeah, sort of. Yes. Different market, different subdomains. But everything was running on HostGator. I made a decent amount of money back in the day when I was still in college and used HostGator because it was simple, right? I mean, you could just host it one time and not care about it because I didn't know, I don't think there was AWS. AWS wasn't so popular back in the day, 10 years back. And I don't know how to host something on AWS, right? But I still know how to use HostGator.
I'm with you. Exactly. Yeah. So for anyone who's interested in doing this, I've been talking about this a lot. HostGator has on this webpage that I'm about to give out three different plans. They obviously have way more plans than that. They will scale up with your business. But if you go to HostGator.com/Mixergy, yes, I keep talking about how you get the lowest price available, but you'll see that middle plan called the baby plan. It has unlimited domains. I should also say it's also unlimited subdomains. So you pay that one price and you get to fire off as many different ideas as you want. So if I wanted to create a website for each person in my family, if it was what AndrewWarner.com is my personal site, I could also create like shepherd.andrewwarner.com, my son, olivia.andrewwarner.com. my wife, and just create a different domain for everybody and let them all play with it, or maybe create a different site for each one of them. Or if I wanted to meet you when I was coming to India and I said, you know what, I don't really know him, obviously now I know you, I could create ish.andrewwarner.com and then have a separate website for you saying, Ish, I'm coming to Bangalore. I'd love to meet you, and I've got your photo and the whole thing, and it looks like I customized something to you because I did. But in reality, it's one click install, one click on HostGator, and the whole thing is up and ready to go. If anyone out there has an idea, they should bring it to HostGator.com/Mixergy. Get the lowest price possible. Just unleash your creativity. The thing that I love about it, Ish, is it's like having a brand new notepad for an artist. An artist might have a brand new notebook. Just sit, draw, and toss out paper, or save the ones that they like. Just sit and draw. When you have HostGator, you have these unlimited domains, which is like having unlimited paper to explore on. Who knows what ideas will come to you? And if one of them does hit, understand, beyond what they publicize on their website, they have lots of new plans that will just keep scaling and growing with your business. But the price will always be low, and the experience will always be there. Go to HostGator.com/Mixergy. And you'll get all of that goodness. And I love that when people use that URL, they're supporting Mixergy. And I appreciate it, guys. Thank you for constantly doing that. It means a lot to me. All right. How did you do as a salesperson reaching out to hundreds of potential customers in the first 6 months?
I don't think I was a good salesperson, especially at B2B when we started off. Because like I remember my first few calls, right? I had the script ready. I was super nervous. When I was doing those calls, I would never cold call. Like even now, I don't know if I can do good cold calls, but these were like people who had responded and stuff. Now I can just enter into any call and then, you know, be like totally okay. Even if it doesn't convert, that's totally fine, but I can still have a conversation, right? Back then, I don't think I was a good salesperson at all, right? I mean, and I think it took me about a year, especially because people were coming in from very different geographies, right? Like, I don't know what this intern was doing, but he was reaching out to people in South America, the Western Europe, and stuff like that.
What was your schedule like then? You're talking about, like right now, you're staying up past 10 o'clock with me. It's 10 p.m. for you, 10:40 p.m. for me, it's 10:40 a.m. What was your schedule? Were you up late nights, early mornings?
So my schedule has been pretty much the same. Still, it's the same, right? So I come to office at about 2 in the afternoon, and I will be up till 4 in the morning. Yeah.
And so can you have a personal life like that? Like, can you go out with friends?
You can, because people don't usually go out on a weekday, but weekends are usually okay, right? So I think, if you have a team who can take care of it, yes. But I think in the initial days, I had to do that because, I mean, it's not just about you closing the sale, but the fact is you want to actually talk to people, have those conversations, try to understand the customer and whatnot, right? So, but still... I think that's sort of a thing you would have to do if your customers are in a different geography altogether. So even right now, it's totally US for us, but we have to build it and sell it from here, right? So yeah, I think that's totally fine, because selling in India it's relatively hard compared to selling to the US. Yeah.
Were you closing sales?
Yeah. So we wouldn't have grown. We wouldn't be here if I wasn't closing, because I was the only salesperson for, I think, almost 2 years. Yeah.
And your technique was, I'm just going to show you my software, give you a demo. I'll show you, here's the problem, here's my demo, and then what?
So I would generally enter into a demo with something already created for them. Like,
Really?
Yeah. So if I was, say, having a conversation with an Allstate insurance, I would actually turn around one of their forms into a chatbot and then enter into a conversation.
Got it. So
basically what you wanted to use was already there. And I was like, you know, what's the next step? The next step could be you actually experimenting, you experiment, you get results, and then you actually start paying us. Yeah.
What did you learn about their problems and the way you communicate by having all those calls?
Yeah. So I think people have the problem, like the problem, I can talk about the problem that we're solving at this point of time, which is a pure conversion rate optimization problem, right? So people do know about the problem because everyone's spending a good amount of dollars every month, and people click and people don't fill out the form, right? So they do know about the problem. The thing is, they don't know that there is a solution like this that exists. So what they've been thinking is, this is the post-click optimization space, right? Like after you click, which is what an Insta page or a lead page is. Actually, Insta page says that, right? Which is what they would be focusing on. And we're seeing something similar. And a lot of marketers still don't care a lot about post-click, right? They do know about the problem. I think that's become easier for us at this point of time. And the good thing is, you know, we've been sort of riding the wave as well because people want to experiment with chatbots somehow.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but people want to use chatbots.
They do now, right? Because it's becoming kind of a topic, a thing.
Yeah.
But one of the things that you realize, it seems like, is they may not be looking for chatbots, or they weren't back then, but 2015, 2016, what they were looking for was a way to optimize what happens after people click an ad or a search result to their site. And that's how you learn to position yourself, right?
Exactly.
And you also, you learned about different industries that need this. In fact, if I go on your website right now, you guys are really good in an area that a lot of other chatbot software companies are not. You have a ton of templates. So I can go over, which I did right now, and I could see real estate template. And you're not just telling me here's how it works or click this link to get it. You're showing me the experience. I can actually even, I can even type in. So I went to the real estate template. It says, hey there, thanks for getting in touch with us. To get things started, may we know your full name? And I would type in my name, Andrew. Oh, I meant to type in Andrew. Oh, look at this. Give your full name, because I just typed in Andrew.
Right, Andrew Warner.
Wow, there you go. And now it says, hi, Andrew. We're excited to help you find your next condo residence. May we have your mobile number? This will help us get in touch with you later. Got it. And I just keep going through. I love the way that this shows. So it feels like this is one of the things that you learned by having all those conversations.
Yeah. I mean, so I think the biggest problem we were facing last year was in terms of what to focus on. I think because chatbot in general could be used in any particular segment or industry or domain. And we were like, you know, what's that one thing our customers care about? And we went back and realized that, you know, 90-95% of our customers had been using our chatbots primarily for lead generation. So they would do these marketing campaigns. It could be an SMS or a text campaign. It could be a push notification. It could be a Google ad, Facebook ad, native ad. It could be anything. People are clicking on something, on a link, and they're landing on a chatbot. And these guys were getting a really, really high conversion rate compared to whatever they were using earlier. And we were like, it does make sense if you have a form in your process, in your marketing funnel, we can turn it around into a chatbot and it's a very simple polyprompt.
You know what? You talked to our producer, Brian Benson, and you explained that one of your problems was trying to figure out what segment to work on. And so most people, when they hear about what segment to work on, they think, should we go after real estate brokers, or should we go after plumbers or someone else? That's part of what you considered, but it's interesting that you ended up not picking a specific industry, but instead picking a specific problem to solve, which is forms stink and we're going to improve forms. What was the process of getting to that realization?
Right. So
it's just hard.
Right. So I think, one thing I would add to that is when you think about a segment, it's not just industry. There are multiple parameters when you think about a segment, right? So one could be industry, which could be real estate or a insurance or a mortgage or something like that, right? But the other parameters could be, what is the use case? Do I want to go after lead generation, or do I want to go after customer support? Do I want to go after employee engagement? There could be different verticals, right? Do I want to go after, which geography do I want to go after, right? So there are like a lot of different parameters. So at one point of time, I was counting and we had like five different moving parameters. Like everything was moving and we couldn't figure out the right messaging, right? And we were like, you know, let's narrow down our segment and we would focus on a specific problem, which is the lead generation. We would focus on a single value proposition, which is higher conversion rates. But then we couldn't figure out which industry should we focus on. But one thing we figured was, you know, most of our customers are B2C customers. Like it's a B2B2C. We don't focus a lot on e-commerce, for instance, because e-commerce wants you to actually buy. We don't do that. Like, so all of these industries that you would see on the website in the templates, you would realize that all of these industries have long forms on their website. Think about legal, real estate, all of those guys. Yeah.
So it's all people, all businesses communicating, not with other businesses, but with consumers. And all of them have a lot of, not just long forms, but a longer sales cycle. So it's not just hit my website and buy, it's hit my website. You probably want to know something about me first. I definitely need to know something about you too. And that's where you guys decided to come in. I'm wondering, was there I don't think that's obvious. I think a lot of people think I'm going to pick an industry to focus on. Did you guys try that and it didn't work? Were you thinking that way?
So that is something we're doing right now. So we're focusing, we're focusing on one industry at a time right now. Like we do get interest from all those industries, but we're like, you know, can we go into a, like, can we narrow down further, go into a particular industry, go very deep into that industry and move to the next industry, next industry, next industry, right? So that's the approach right now. So I think we would go even more narrow down approach in terms of the industry, go after that. Because, I mean, so we're trying to make our lives simple and easy in terms of marketing, because if you know that you have to go after real estate, you know, where do these people hang out? Who are those people? You get 50, 100 customers in a particular domain. It's very easy to get the next few customers, right? And you can actually build a multi-million sort of a ARR business in each industry. So it's not like the market is small. Yeah.
Let's go a little bit further back in your history for a moment. You're someone who worked hard. You went to school. Your friends went to school. They worked hard. You decided, I'm going to go out and be an entrepreneur. Your friends went out and got jobs. What was that like, watching them go off and get jobs?
Right. So good question. So I started working on, I told you about the education website back in college itself, right? Because I felt like I should do something which is different than what the other people were doing. Because I don't know if it was sort of my way to just, you know, satisfy my ego or whatever it was. But I just didn't want to be a part of that entire crowd, which was just going to school and not doing something on the side, right? So I wanted to have that side hustle running. And I think that was, you know, I think that was something I was doing the second year or the first, after the first year of college, right? And I think that really helped the last 3 years of my college when I was actually working or doing something on the side. That was a good motivation, and I knew I could make money. It wasn't like I'm going to be jobless if I leave my job. I knew I could make money.
It was just about,
because I was actually making money while I was still in college, right?
With these side projects that you're talking about.
Yeah, because I used to get about 1 million hits on my website and on a monthly basis, right?
So which website?
The EduArena website that I'm talking about. It used to get 30,000 visits a day, right? And this is back in 2010.
How?
I mean, I don't know how much you know about the Indian education system, but there are these few exams that almost every kid, after they pass high school, they have to appear for, right? And I was building content for that. And I learned how to do SEO and stuff like that. And I was focusing on a market that a lot of other players weren't, right? So I was focusing. So think about this, right? You have 1 million people applying to a certain exam. Other people are focusing on the first 50,000 and you focus on the rest 900,000, right? So I wasn't building content for the first 100,000. I was building content for the last 900,000, right? And I think I was able to make around $2,000 a month using just ads. I didn't know how to make more money, but that was good enough for me. That was good savings as well. That was not bad. But I knew like $2,000 is a decent amount of money, even at this point of time, for someone to survive. Yeah.
And still, you watch all your friends who didn't have this skill, even though you knew how to make money, you watch them go off and get jobs with certain money, right? You watch them go off and get jobs while you were not doing as well. And you talked to our producer. He sent me a note about this. He said, you were thinking, what am I doing with my life? Am I actually making the right decision here, right?
Right. So I think, I spoke with Brian, right? And
yeah.
I was talking about that period when we were doing the first version of TAS, which was June, and we stopped doing that in September. Mm-hmm. And that September to December period was when I was thinking, what am I doing? Because all of these other kids from my college are now, they've even passed out of their B school, because this was like 3 years out of college. So people just go to a B school just after their engineering, just after their undergrad, right? And they were in good jobs. And I was back to square one, because I had stopped working on the travel startup I was working on. This was going nowhere. And I was like, shit, man, I'm 3 years out of college and I don't really know what to do next, right? But I think that was a time when I could have gone back to my any job, basically, or probably go to a B school, and this wouldn't have happened. But yeah, I think that was the point where I started thinking that, you know, what am I really doing with my life, because it's not going anywhere. But yeah.
By the way, you mentioned that you were good at SEO. So I went to Ahrefs, I typed in your domain, and I do see that you're getting a lot of interesting clicks. Like VentureBeat did this post called 11 chatbots created at Y Combinator's online startup school. You're in that freaking post, even though you didn't go to Y Combinator. How did you get into posts like this? How are people writing about you?
Right. So I think we reach out to a lot of people. They don't just figure out about us all of a sudden, right? Like most of the listicles that you would find us in,
yeah,
we'd actually reach out to them. Like they didn't just figure us out, right? But I think what we're doing with the SEO play is, you know, all of these I think templates that we've been building. A lot of people search for chatbot templates, right? So that's why we've been doing a good amount of stuff on the templates piece. Like if you go to if you search for say a legal chatbot or a mortgage chatbot, real estate chatbot, if you search for doctor appointment chatbot, we would be in the doctor appointment one. I think we should be at the top, depending on the geography. But then yeah, I mean, so we rank for pretty much all of those keywords. Yeah.
I'm searching for it right now. By the way, I love how Ahrefs also gives me links to just about all the chatbots on your platform. I don't want to reveal too much, but I can see here credit21.hellotars.com. That's your domain. Creditmaster.hellotars.com. apcredit.hello. You guys are big in the credit space. But it goes beyond. I can see legalloansingapore.hellotars.com, and it just goes on and on and on. I could see what the experiences are like, and it's pretty interesting. So what I'm noticing is a lot of people are sending traffic directly to your site using a subdomain directly to the chatbot, not on their website. It's not that little thing that appears on the bottom right, but it's a full-on landing page replacement.
Yes. So it is a conversational landing page or a chatbot landing page where people are like, I mean, so when you were introducing me, I think this is what I wanted to add in. It's not just I think 80% of our customers won't use us as a widget on their website. They would take people directly to the chatbot.
That's what I was seeing in your face, that I was off. I sensed it, but got it. All right. I should talk about my second sponsor, and then we'll get into how you grew once you figured out what you were about. We'll talk a little bit about Product Hunt, a little bit about AppSumo, and then this platform that you built. But first, I'll tell anyone, if you're listening to me and there's an idea for a project that you're getting from one of these interviews, and maybe you don't have the bandwidth for it, your team doesn't have the bandwidth to actually go and implement it. One of the things that I've noticed by listening to my interviewees who have used TopTal, my sponsor, is they'll say, you know what? People shouldn't do this. Let's get somebody who's done this before and let's just sick them on the problem. And so they'll go to TopTal and they'll say, you know, I heard about automated, I heard about AI, artificial intelligence, or I heard about machine learning. And I think there's a way that we could apply it. I need somebody who's done it before, who's done it like I have, like I want to do it for a different business. I want to hire them. You go to TopTal, they'll set you up with a matcher. The matcher will understand your problem. The matcher will see what they have in their network. And then they'll come back to you with two or three different incredible developers. The best, the best. That's what TopTal focuses on. You get on a call with them. If you like them, you can hire them. Often get started right away. If you don't like them, no harm, no loss. So all you have to do is go to toptal.com/mixergy, where you can sign up. And if you go to that URL, you'll get 80 hours of TopTal developer credit for free when you pay for your first 80 hours. In addition to, get this, a no-risk trial period. So here it is. Top is on top of your head. Tal is in talent. TOPTAL.com/Mixergy. And of course, Mixergy is MIXERGY. Thanks, TopTal. What did you do with Product Hunt? I saw a lot of Product Hunt on Ahrefs.
Right. So I think when we launched there are two parts to product, right? The front-end chatbot and then there's a builder, the chatbot builder. So I think we did the first launch on Product Hunt in 2017 starting. And I think we got a decent amount of interest from there. Like I think we got about 950 upvotes or something. And I think we got the initial boost from there, because for the first 1 year, I think most of our customers were from our geography. And this was the first time when a lot of these marketers from the US were coming in and testing out the product, right? And we had just launched the product. So it was a good thing that, you know, people were coming in and testing out the product and telling us all those bugs that existed. That was one. And the second thing was
I do see two different, I see three different things that you guys listed for. One is called make chatbots to replace your regular old web forms. That's what we're talking about, right?
So we've done a lot of product hunt launches. Okay. Because we see, product hunt has worked out sort of as a lead gen channel for us. So if you go into my profile and look at the submitted or the makers one, you would
see all the ones. Okay.
Right. Do we've done like a meme generator bot. We've done like a Jiffy bot. And we've done quite a few of them. And some of them have done decently. Recently, we launched the templates on Product Hunt. But we've got a decent number of...
I see that. Tar's chatbot templates also listed on Product Hunt. Got 275 votes and a bunch of people engaging with it. Got it. And then I see another one. Meme creator bot. It got 294 votes. And so you just keep going back and saying, you know what? Our product can be used for a lot of different things. We'll focus on creating different versions of it and then submit it in here. So the first thing that you did was just replace web forms, right? Wait. I do see that you also submitted Tar's appointment booking chatbots. Is that the first one?
No, the first one would have been somewhere around 900 plus upwards.
900 plus. Okay, I see Tar's. Make chatbots to replace regular old web forms.
Right. That must have been the first version, early 2017. Yeah.
Okay. And so that sent you a bunch of traffic, a bunch of interest. You were number three on Product Hunt for the day, and that got you customers. Is the next thing that you did, is that going on to AppSumo and doing an offer with them?
Yes. So I think we did the Product Hunt launch on February 21st, if I'm not wrong, of 2017, right? And the next month, because I'll tell you the numbers, right? We had like 100 accounts, 110 accounts when we launched our builder, right? Okay. And AppSumo gave us 2,000 accounts. Right.
2,000 accounts from being on AppSumo.
Yeah, because it's not just about the accounts, because what really matters is 2,000 people actually coming in and making stuff on what you've built. Because if you had done the normal stuff, it will take a lot of time to get even a single user. You can launch a new product, nobody's going to come and even play around with the product, right? Now, someone has paid to actually use your product, right? Uh-huh. So we didn't care much about the money we were making out of it, but what we really cared was these people were coming in. And I have two conversations. Like I have two calls. I had just had one call and I have another call with a guy who signed up during AppSumo. And I keep reaching out to all of these people just because I want a better sense of their industry. Like I would reach out to them and people are super helpful. They would have calls with you. You can actually do some sort of co-promotion because all of these are marketers, marketing agencies and whatnot, right? So it served out really well. I think we did this in April of 2017, just 2 months after Product Hunt. And that gave us the initial boost. Yeah.
Got it. So you're getting sales but you're also getting people come in, use your software and that helps. What's the next thing that you did to the product? What's this platform play?
Right. So I think for the whole of first year, the 2016, Vineet was actually hard coding all these bots. Right.
So people couldn't go and create their own form. You created it for them?
Yes. So we hard coded all the chatbots all by ourselves. Right.
And if somebody needed a change, could you change it for them? Or wait, if I wanted a form for my site, I would come to you and you would code up my form.
I would code up your chatbot essentially. And then you would basically give us all of this data in a Google Doc. Vineet would hard code all the stuff. So we didn't build stuff in the for a long, long time. Yeah. Right.
Wow. So he's sitting there hard coding it for me. If I say, you know what, I want to change the language, I would come back to you and say, can you change it? I don't want to use surname. People don't use the word surname. They use last name. Can you go in and do that? He would go in and change that language himself for me.
Right. At least for the first 6 months. Then we built the platform, but we didn't release it for like 3-4 months because we wanted to use it internally. And then we were like, you know, if this platform is, like, I can tell you the numbers again, right? We were 100 accounts, around 225 bots when we launched the builder, the chatbot builder on Product Hunt. We were at 225 bots. I think we are more than 26,000 bots at this point of time, right? So you can see the difference. If Vineet was hard coding all those bots, we would not, you know, be able to scale up. So I think
the idea was you wanted to do it in yourselves, but you knew eventually you were going to have your own builder so anyone can go and create it.
Exactly, right? So I think we took time in building the first version of the builder and everything, but I think that is what helped us. And like some of the features that are there in the platform are just because we knew people would need it at some point of time. Like we built that because Vineet was actually doing that in all those spots, right? Like if you have to do like a webhook or an API integration, it's not really possible with a lot of other chatbot platforms. But we built it in the first version itself just because our customers had already been using it. Like, and Vineet didn't want to actually do that. Like he was frustrated with all the stuff he was doing. So yeah.
I'm on that first site. It's cute. You've got different buttons that I can press to see different types of chatbots. And you've always been really good about showing people what it looks like. I do think the phrase bot and or chatbot is really confusing for people. But on the left side of your landing page, there is like a cartoonish robot for ordering and booking. And I could hit that and I could see what it would look like if Domino's had a chatbot with you. And I could actually kind of engage with that and press vegetarian pizza, which is what I would want. And I could see that it says, okay, pick one, which type. And I like the way you guys make it look. I can, it's different chat elements. When we say chat too, people think they have to sit and type in. But it's not a lot of typing in. If you say, what kind of pizza do you want? Meat or vegetarian? Each one of those becomes a different button. I just press vegetarian. If you say, okay, now pick one of our many different vegetarian options, you're now giving me a scrollable image description for each one. So I can see that there's a Roman vegetarian supreme, and then I see what's included in it, but I can scroll to the right and see that there's the, what is that, Peppy or Poppy paneer. Oh, that sounds really good. So I could select that and send that over to the bot. It's really well done. And I like the landing pages that you guys have created. Mostly. There's still like some things that don't feel like American. Like you still use may. That's very much an Indian thing to say. You're being extremely polite. May I have your first name? It's like, what's your first name?
Right. We are humble.
Yeah, humble and nice. It's almost like you're subservient. We are here to serve you instead of give me your first name. I do see even early on, there's something called Startup Accelerator, the MongoDB Startup Accelerator. What is that? What were you guys doing with them?
Right. So I think, so when you're early, you want to use all the free credits, right? So Mongo gave us the free credits, I think. So we use Mongo as the backend and we use pretty much their Mongo Atlas and stuff like that as well. So I think that is their way of, that's their growth hack. Like they give you free credits and you just have to add it on their website. And we really wanted to add because we really appreciate the products people have built. So you would find all those mentions, even the places where you bought images from, we actually mentioned where we're using those bot images from. You would see that.
Because why are you mentioning where you got the bot images? Because you get it for free if you link to them, or you just get credibility by linking to them?
Because someone made this and we wanted to let people know that there's some maker out there who actually worked on it. So
got it.
If you're doing this, like it's not our art. Like it's someone else who made this.
Yeah, I see it. Robot image graphics lovingly delivered by robohash.org. But I see. So MongoDB will say to new companies, we'll let you use our software for free. Just put a link to us so that people know that you're using us and you're doing it. And it also gives you a little bit of credibility because it doesn't just say MongoDB gave us free credit on their site. It says the Startup Accelerator, which gives you a lot more credibility. Got it. Yeah. I see how this is playing out for you. So here's the thing that I was telling you before we got started and I want to hold off. I feel like there are other companies like Drift who are just so good at communications. They are spot on. You guys are working hard. They're working hard too. But they've got this like swagger with startup space. In Intercom, same thing. They created their own chatbot system. They've got this way of communicating that you guys, I feel, are lacking. What do you think about that?
Good question. Okay. So I would definitely say, you know, I wouldn't say, I wouldn't place Intercom and Drift in the same league in terms of both the product and the marketing.
In the same league as you?
No. I'm saying the same league among themselves, like between themselves as well.
Because it's two different products. What Drift wants to do is sales qualification and Intercom wants to do more customer service, or what are you thinking?
Not in terms of that, in terms of marketing as well. Like you would see Intercom's marketing is very different from how Drift would do their marketing. like Intercom's marketing is more product focused. Like they would write long form blogs. They would build a really good product. Their customers would talk about it and stuff like that, right? Their marketing has not been about a lot of swag or a lot of LinkedIn or a lot of videos. They haven't been about that. They have been done pretty educational marketing, right? Uh-huh. Drift has been totally on the other side. And I really appreciate what they have done. Like, I really like their marketing because everyone is talking about them, right? So definitely they've done a good job. But I think even when you say that everyone is talking about them, it's actually in a certain niche. Like, for instance, I was in the US in November, and I could only, like, when I was talking to people about my product, nobody brought up Drift. And it happened only when I was in the West Coast.
Because here it's people are thinking about them, but marketers are not necessarily thinking of them. They're thinking of lead pages, for example, or click funnels, and that's how they're comparing you guys to.
Right. So they would compare us against a form, and like people, like I usually used to think that, you know, everyone in the US, at least a marketer, would know what a chatbot is. But people in the B2C, like the kind of industries we focus on, right? Nobody in the mortgage space knows an Intercom, for instance. Like they don't have Intercom on their websites.
Okay, got it.
They use lenderhomepage.com. Like that's their website builder, right?
What is the one?
Lenderhomepage.com.
Oh, I see it. Got it. And these guys are creating landing pages for lenders. I see. It's like ClickFunnels for lenders. And that's who they're comparing you to.
Right. So they would talk about, you know, can I have the 1003 form converted into a chatbot? Right.
Right.
Like they would talk about something very different. And even if you go after auto dealerships, right, people don't use com. They use something called a Gubagoo.
Okay.
Right. So they use, and the Gubagoo is a pretty big company. That's like a 250 employees based out somewhere in the East Coast, Miami, Florida.
What is it called? Gubagoo?
Gubagoo. I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's G-U-B-A-G-O-O. Right. And it's only built for auto dealerships, basically.
Okay.
Right. So it's a very specific, you know, like it's like Salesforce and then a Weaver, right? Like Weaver is doing something similar, only in the pharma space, and you can actually build really good businesses. So I think, you know, everyone is doing their job. Someone is really good at certain kind of marketing, but you don't really have to do, like you don't have to appeal to the Valley crowd or a B2B tech company, right?
Okay.
A lot of other people have money as well. So you could focus on those guys and make really good businesses. But yeah, I don't know if that answers your question or did I?
Yeah, what you're doing is you're helping me see that my question even could be a little bit unscrambled, that it's not about the ones that I'm thinking about. I get now where your customers are coming from and how it would be different. I still think that there's a little bit of marketing something that's missing. So that brings me kind of to talking about like operating outside of San Francisco or outside the US. The language is the same. You're speaking English. You were probably born, were you brought up speaking English?
Yes. I mean, right?
Yeah. Right. So you're speaking English, we're speaking English, but it's different culturally. And I'm wondering about some of the challenges. So far, we've just made it seem like you might as well have been in Queens, New York, building your company, right? What are some of the challenges? What are some of the differences in creating a company in India? The good and the bad.
Right. So I can talk about the good part first, because I don't see there are a lot of bad things about being here. But I was actually talking to a friend of mine just yesterday, right? So he's moved to Toronto and he was talking about his life there and stuff like that. And I was like, you know, you can't really build, like it's very tough to build a bootstrap business, at least in the first couple of years, if you're in the US, because your expenses would be too high, right? We were just a couple of founders. We could do this because our expenses were like super low, right? Like my expense back in the day would have been $300 a month.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Wow. For rent too?
For everything.
For everything. Rent and food. And what do you get for $300 a month? Give me a description of the lifestyle that you have.
You would stay in a good, say, a good flat. You would obviously share, but you would get a good room. You would work out of a co-working space. you would eat good food. You would have a cook at your place cooking food. You don't have to cook food all yourself.
What do you mean at your place? At your flat?
Yep, you would have a cook who would cook food for you.
Ooh, so you could stay healthy. You're not going to McDonald's and loading up on fats.
No. So there would be a cook who would cook food for you 2 times a day. You would have a maid who would, you know, like you don't have to wash your dishes yourself. There'll be a maid who would do that, right? And you could do that all for $300. Like even now, I think my expense would be what, $600, $700 a month?
Wow, okay.
So you could, so the point was you could build a really neat product with very minimal expenses, right? If I had to do the same thing in the Valley, it would have been like, it would not have, I don't know if that's possible or not, but I was there, like I've been to the US only once, I've been to Canada, you know, a couple of times, other places, but I found it super expensive, right? Like if you have to drink coffee, you have to spend some $6 to $7, right? That's you can spend your entire day.
You know what? Let's say less. $3 if it's $3 to $5 if it's just regular cup of coffee. If you're adding if you're getting latte and specialty drinks,
absolutely. Right. I mean, yeah. So if you have a pour over, you would spend more, right?
Freaking pour over. Yeah. Right. So anyone who's bootstrapping and starting out and getting a freaking pour over at whatever, just come on. You got to stop that. It's not just about the money. It's the time and attention that the person has to spend pouring over. Like, get the freaking coffee and move on with your life. Wow. Okay.
Right. But that is the good part. The second part is good talent, right? Like you would get really good engineering talent, at least in Bangalore, Chennai, Delhi, right? And again, like it's not that expensive. Like I don't need to. Like I was in the Valley. I was talking to another chatbot company, and they were raising around just because they had to hire 4 more people. I was like, really? That doesn't make sense, right? Because every new team member you're spending 150,000. Here you would be spending 10,000, right? So it's a
Yeah. 10,000 for how long? A year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I got to just emphasize that. I think that there was a time there, I think around when Tim Ferriss started writing about going to Argentina, where people were saying, okay, I could live in Argentina and work in the US. And it was eye-opening. And I went there, and living in Argentina was cheaper, was friendlier, was like a better lifestyle in many ways. And it was eye-opening. I think that we need to start having our eyes open to the fact that we could both live and start companies outside. Now, I haven't talked to someone who's left the US and started a company outside, but I'm seeing the possibilities. The life doesn't have to be so hard. Like when I look at Neil Patel, he says the reason that he has this quiet comfort is because Neil paid for his houses already. He's not having to pay the mortgage every month and go, holy crap, what do I do if I don't? Right? There's a sense of calm that comes, but he had to work 10 years to get there. You had that sense of calm day one, $300 a month. Right. I could find a way to do it. And it's not just you. I was just in Singapore where I talked to the founder of Sales Whale. I said, you got to Y Combinator. They not only invested in you, but they have lawyers who can help you stay in the US. Why didn't you do it? He said, dude, do you understand how cheap it is for me to hire developers even in Singapore, which is not known for being inexpensive?
Okay.
Why would I spend money living where you are even if Y Combinator wants to make it easy for me when I could get these developers and live this type of lifestyle? And by the way, the lifestyle for him isn't as cheap as it is for you. But I think that there's something that comes from knowing that he could work as late as he wants because his wife will understand, because culturally it's supported that you're in hustle mode and you could work late. And there isn't this sense of shame that why are you working so late? So lower prices, different culture. We shouldn't necessarily say, let's just go fly out there, but we should realize there is a world of possibility. Give me one other benefit before we go into some of the challenges, because I don't want to make it look like this is all butterflies and roses.
So I think, in terms of product that is good, you can build, I think, you know, cost is one, talent is one. I mean, even for us, we, like the guy who you must have seen in the video on our website, he works out of LA. So he's based out of Los Angeles, right? He's not like, we do have a couple of people in the
US. You mean on your homepage, you have a guy who's in Los Angeles?
Yeah, he works out of LA, right? He's an Indian guy. Like he's been working with us for 3 years now, but he's based out of there, right? It's not like our team is completely based out of India, but yes, most of the people do work out of Bangalore, right? And we eventually want to build a remote company as well, because when you build a remote company, you can have processes built in and stuff like that, right? But yeah.
Wait. Let's talk about that. So I should be done with you with this interview. I've got another call, but I can't let you freaking go. Okay. I just got back from running remote in Bali. A whole bunch of people who are sitting learning from other companies who are running remote like them. Before then, I thought the only benefit of being a remote team is that you get lower prices. You get to hire people from cheaper places. You don't have to spend for office. Right. What I learned is it's not necessarily about that. For many people, they'll spend more. Like the founder of Help Scout said, I will invest whatever money we save by not having office space. I'll invest it in regular company meetings where we fly everybody out because I think that it helps. And I'm not trying to save money by having a remote team. But he said there are other benefits to a remote team. And several people said what you said, which is you get better processes when people aren't in the same room. Explain that. What do you mean by that?
So I'll give you an example, right? So the guy I'm talking about who works remotely from LA, he does...
Arnav Patel.
Yeah. Arnav Patel, right? He's somehow connected to Neil Patel, I think, but he doesn't.
Everybody is, okay.
But yeah, so he does marketing, especially content-specific ones, right? Now, I have a certain process. Like, I know what he's going to work on, and it's very much documented. Like, if a new person joins us in content marketing, they can just go through the entire log of last year because every call is documented. Everything is documented. There's like we have a 80-point checklist for every video that we create, right? It's a very documented process because
if you were living in the same space, you could just tell him, here's how we do it. He'll be able to ask you and understand. But if he's in a different time zone, different city, you have to have it written down so he doesn't have to wait for you to wake up and be available.
Exactly. And the second part is I have to know what he's doing, right? So like those processes have to be built in so that there's a clear communication between both of us. The other people in the team would know what Arnav is doing because otherwise people would be like, you know, I don't even know what he's doing, right? You would want to have more communication within the team. But right now, the other processes we're just trying to build because everyone was working from here, right? We don't have a written documentation around it.
Yeah.
So I think if we think, you know, about building the team from remotely from day one, I think we'll be better off, better processes, better everything. Yeah.
Okay. And so how about one challenge? Let's be open.
The challenge is you won't, like I have, we're not good at marketing. Like I don't see, like, honestly, like if you go through our newsletters, if you scroll down to the page, you would see our newsletters. And I would say we are really good at newsletters. This is something I would boast about because this is how people recognize us. Like people know me just because of our newsletters, right? And Arnav is the guy who does our newsletters, and people really respond to it because they are like pretty funny, humorous. We don't care about the language we are writing in, uh-huh. right? They're not like the usual regular newsletters, but I see you won't find very good marketing talent at this point of time, at least for B2B space. You won't find good, like you might, but it's not as good as what you would find in the US. Yeah. So that is one for sure. Secondly is there's still not many success stories. So you don't know, like it's just building up, the whole community is building up, but you would see a lot of people who've done like a 20 mil, 30 million or a 50 million exit in the B2B space in the US, right? Not many in India right now.
Uh-huh.
It's still early as an ecosystem. There are people like, there are a lot of people you know, a lot of people in Chennai, Chargebee, Freshdesk, all of these guys, Kissflow, doing a lot of events around to build that community, but still early. So I think that is possibly an advantage people in the US would have because there are a lot of people who have done that before. Yeah.
Right. I remember we mentioned Clay Collins before we started, the founder of Lead Pages. He said he didn't have the sense of creating a software company until he heard it on Mixergy that this was a possibility. And then that opened his eyes. And you're right. When you're surrounded by people who are doing something, it does change the way that you do things. Like if you're surrounded by people who do nothing but buy lattes for $8, you go, all right, this is a natural thing for me to do.
Mm-hmm. Same thing. So when I was listening to the Clay Collins and your podcast, right? I was like, Clay knew Andrew. Like, this is so simple. Andrew could just send an email to all of his subscribers and you would have a lot of customers. We don't have that advantage. We need to build that from scratch, right? So, I mean, that is a problem with being, because from a different culture, you speak a very, you can't connect to a lot of stuff. It's like, I don't know a lot about how real estate works in the US, right? But I have to learn all of that from scratch because I don't know. Right.
You weren't born with that experience around you.
Right.
I have to tell you though, by talking to so many people, you are getting it. You're understanding the software they use. You're understanding the words they use. I feel like what you guys have done really well is talk a lot to your people, talk incessantly to your people. Your blog does that. You do it on calls. I think still to this day, yeah, there it is on the site, on the homepage, and on the blog and everywhere else, you're emphasizing schedule a demo, get on a call with someone. Why is the company called TARS? I saw someone on Product Hunt say, this is a great name. I go, why? What am I missing? What does TARS mean?
So the name has been the same from day one, even when we were a B2C WhatsApp-based thing. And when we started, we wanted to keep it around a bot. And if you remember the Interstellar movie, there's a bot called TARS.
Okay.
Yeah. So
okay.
We just picked that. But then people started asking us, is there a full form or a sort of an acronym, right? And then we said, yes, this is an acronym, which means Text Automated Response System. Which doesn't mean, but yeah. So, but it's just the bot's name. And then we couldn't get TARS.com. So we were like, HelloTARS.com.
All right. It is HelloTARS.com for anyone who wants to go check it out. Explore, I think, the templates. It'll show you a lot. I have been incredibly high on the whole idea of chatbots. I think this is the future of business to consumer communication. I think that this is what people are more used to now, and we need to address them where they are. By the way, I even created a whole site to try to teach this because I'm fascinated by it. It's called BotAcademy.com. You guys can go check it out. And I want to thank the two sponsors who made this interview happen. Dude, Ish, I'm so glad that we were able to talk. I freaking love the story. I love talking to you. The two sponsors who made this happen, HostGator, check them out at HostGator.com/Mixergy and TopTal.com/Mixergy. Finally, I'm incredibly proud of the work that we've been doing at Mixergy Premium. I'm seeing people sign up. We just got Ari on our team call yesterday, said, Andrew, did you see the email from the guy who said that he's been a subscriber for years and didn't know you even had Mixergy Premium? I said, no, I didn't. She sent it over to me. And I'm realizing people don't know that we do this. I bring back many of the entrepreneurs who've done interviews with me to come back and teach courses. Like we were just talking about how to document a process for a team. There's an entrepreneur who runs Trainual, software for creating training manuals for your team. We brought him back to talk about how to organize your team using documentation. Yeah. It's available at Mixergy Premium. Who else was it? I've talked a lot about how I needed to have a company culture. I brought back the guy who did the best company culture, second to Tony Hsieh, to teach how he does it. It's part of Mixergy Premium. If anyone's listening to me and they have not experienced Mixergy Premium, you should absolutely try it. I highly recommend you go to MixergyPremium.com and go just sign up. If you don't love it, we'll give you your money back. But I'm incredibly proud of the work we're doing. I especially love that we're now improving the video quality and pumping these things out every other week, just about we're doing it. All right. I'm proud of it. I'm glad that you're here, Ish. I'm glad that everyone's out there. Build your companies, Ish. I hope the two of us will get to meet in person. And ideally, I would love it for me to come to you and see you.
That would be great. Yeah.
Gotta get out there. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Yep.
Bye, everyone. Bye.